Welcome back to Marvel Good Yay, the spinoff of the Geek Easy podcast, where we're going back and rewatching, or I guess just watching in this case, all of the MCU films leading up to the release of Avengers Endgame. I am Pixel Dan,
Jonathan Leonard,
and Jaren McCaffrey.
And today, we're getting into a proper discussion on Captain Marvel. We did talk about this one a little bit on the Geek Easy podcast right after the movie first came out, but we still wanted to do a proper episode here on Marvel Good Yay since we've talked about all the other Marvel movies, and this is our very last one before Avengers Endgame comes out. Really exciting stuff. So let's just jump right into it. You got the stats ready on this one? Because this just came out this year. This is a 2019 film.
It's another one with no production budget information out there. Well, I don't know if it's out there. It's not where I look. But we do have box office information. So far, a total of $394 million domestically. This is still in theaters, still running.
Yeah.
Strong enough. You know, it's still making some money. But that's as of this recording. Foreign total of 677.999994.
That's a lot of nines.
Pretty much 678 million.
Yeah.
For a grand total of $1.072 billion. Another one in the billion-dollar club. I think there's six or seven of these Marvel movies.
Yeah.
In the billion-dollar club. And again, this one is and counting. It's definitely slowed down, almost to a halt at this point. Mm-hmm. We're not going to see any big jumps. I don't know if Endgame coming out will give it a little bit of a boost in its final weeks or anything like that.
Oh, it'd be interesting to see.
I mean, it's not going to kick it up 10 million more
or anything like that.
So we're looking at somewhere in the $103, $105 million range when all is said and done, I think. But that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. It seems like it's performed really well.
Yep. Another one that I could probably peg somewhere between $150 and $200 million on the production budget, if I had to guess.
Right. And so this is an interesting one too, because this is one where we're getting a little bit of a period piece again, much in the way that we were introduced to Captain America by jumping back to World War II and seeing his origin story. With Captain Marvel, we're actually jumping back to the 1990s to get her origin story, which is pretty interesting stuff. So this takes place outside of the current timeline within the Marvel Universe, but we know that this is setting her up to appear within, and at this point we all know that she's going to show up in Endgame. There was the teaser at the end of Infinity War, which was kind of a lead into this, but also kind of let us know that she's going to be a player in the fight against Thanos. So this movie kind of basically acts as a way to introduce us to the character and show us what she's all about.
Well, and not to skip all the way to the very end, but one of the post-credit sequences here is her basically showing up with the Avengers.
Right. Yes.
So,
I mean,
we get right to it. We know that's what's coming.
Right.
It just starts in a blockbuster.
It starts in a blockbuster. Yeah, essentially. So this is a character that I have always known about but never really followed. She always went by Miss Marvel in the comics when I was younger.
Yep.
I think it's only more recently that they've really started referring to her as Captain Marvel, right? It's within the last several years.
And there's been several Captain Marvels, haven't there?
Just the two.
Just two?
Just her and
Mar-Vell. Okay. Right? Yeah. Because Carol Danvers was still Miss Marvel, I think.
Okay.
There was a character. So there was a brief stint where Mar-Vell was like banished to the negative zone, and he had a character who swapped places with him. Right, so he was a normal human that had like the same bracelets, and he could hit the bracelets together and swap places. But then after Mar-Vell, so it seemed like Billy Batts and Shazam situation, except it was completely different people. But the other guy was never Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel. Same name.
Right.
What's going on there?
Yeah. The other guy was never Captain Marvel. He was just how Captain Marvel showed up places.
Yeah.
There is another character currently in the books called Captain Marvel, I think, where she's got like a weird, like, I want to say she's got like a stretchy arm kind of power or something.
No,
like
she's Miss Marvel.
Oh, she's Miss Marvel?
She's the new Miss Marvel.
Okay, all right. Okay.
Kamala Khan, I think.
Yes. Okay, that's who I'm talking about.
She's the new Miss Marvel.
Okay. So my as a comic book fan, as from a kid, being a kid and everything, the only thing I ever really knew about Miss Marvel, Carol Danvers, was that she was the character that Rogue got her powers from.
Yes. Yep.
Because Rogue used her absorbing ability and like to the max on her, to the point that like it put her in a coma.
Yeah.
And Rogue permanently got her flight and super strength.
Yep.
Which is why Rogue has those powers. Mm-hmm. So that is like that is literally the only thing I really knew about Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel, other than the fact that I know that she exists and I know that she's a character out there. So this movie is pretty fresh for me as far as like the origins and all that stuff. I don't really know. I didn't really follow all this.
So yeah, I didn't know anything about it going in.
Yeah. So I actually knew a little bit about Captain Marvel because this one time I found a like a graphic novel called The Death of Captain Marvel at a garage sale that I bought for, you know, 10 cents or whatever.
Right.
And it was the weirdest, most boring comic I've ever read.
Really?
Because it's just, yeah, because the original Captain Marvel just died of cancer.
Oh,
and,
okay.
Like, so, I mean, there's basically this whole graphic novel, and I still have it somewhere. It's probably really good to read, but as a kid, buying comics for
superhero stories,
stuff to just reading this comic about this superhero dying of cancer is super weird. Although, you know, but like, and it was so, I was so like, man, this comic book, like it did make me want to find out more about like, do all Captain Marvel comic books suck? So like I, it was weird, like it, but it piqued my interest, you know, and I did go and find out some more about Captain Marvel because of it. So that's why I know, even though I can't remember the other dude's name, you know, but that's why I know a little bit about it.
Got it. All right. Who wants to get us started with this one?
Jaren can.
Oh, okay. Jaren doesn't have notes this time.
I don't have any notes. But I'm a big fan. So we start with Carol. Mm-hmm. Well, we start with Veers.
She's Veers, right?
She starts off being called Veers on the Kree homeworld.
Yeah.
And she wakes up. She's having a dream. And she wakes up and decides to go have a fight with Jude Law, who is Yon-Rogg. Is that how you say his name?
I think it sounds
Yon-Rogg. Yeah. But he's a Kree soldier, and she's being trained as a Kree soldier.
Right.
And they kind of have this, you know, mentor-trainee relationship where he's telling her about, you know, don't use your powers, and you got to be able to, you know, fight this way and don't be so emotional and all this stuff, you know, pretty standard stuff that we're used to hearing from like that mentor character. Right.
Right.
And of course she can't, and she blasts him with her powers and gets in trouble and has to go commune with the Supreme Intelligence. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so like right off the bat, it puts me in kind of a weird, like the movie puts you in kind of a weird spot because we've only ever seen the Kree as villains.
Yes. You know? Like, the Kree have already been around in the MCU. We know that they're not good guys from what we've seen.
It took me mentally a little while to associate that when I first saw it.
Oh, really?
It wasn't like, I just wasn't in that frame of mind, I guess. Because it was one of those deals where I was like, I just associated them as good guys because Captain Marvel was one of them. And then I think it was when, like, Digimon Houston showed up. And I was like, oh, he was in, oh, yeah, he's the same guy. Oh, yeah. Like, what is going on here? You know.
Yeah.
Also, like, I mean, most of them are blue, and some of them just aren't. Like, why is
Yon-Rogg?
Why is he look like human with cool eyes?
Maybe he's not like an actual Kree species, but he is a soldier on the planet Kree. I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe it's something like that.
I am not sure.
Yeah.
That's so probably there is a fan and a listener.
Yeah, who could tell us.
Who can comment why, you know, but there's also, you know, the Kree Empire or whatever it is kind of, you know, I mean, they rule a lot of planets.
Right, right.
You know, so it's not a huge stretch to imagine that there is
other species
and stuff kind of involved.
Just part of this Kree Empire, right?
Right, you know. Or that maybe, you know, there's like pure Kree and then, you know, maybe some, I don't know, Lower Cree. Okay. You know, I don't know. I don't know, again. But let us know.
save our show, fans.
Save yeah. it. Well, I was just giving them time to go down and write. I know they got to type. So Varys goes and communes with the Supreme Intelligence, who is a woman that she doesn't remember. So they set
Annette
up.
Benning.
Yeah, I'm
surprised she doesn't recognize
her. She doesn't remember her, John.
Oh.
She doesn't remember why she's... So the Supreme Intelligence in this shows up to you, however, with, as the person you admire most.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's how you... When you commune with them, that's how you see them. And the Supreme Intelligence basically is like, you probably don't need to worry about who you used to be. Just go out there and control yourself and do what we want you to do.
Yeah.
And they send her on a mission. And they go on the mission.
And it's a Skrull mission, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, right. Yeah, yes.
They've introduced the Skrulls bit on like billboards and stuff throughout.
Yeah.
The Kree homeworld there.
Yep.
They're talking about the number of days since the Skrull attack, and they've got it showing like them like changing forms and how they can look like anybody.
Right.
And so they get sent on this mission, and they show up in this world, and they even say. That the accusers are going to bomb a certain area as a distraction, and so we'll just sneak in, and we're not to mess with the locals at all, and they won't mess with us, hopefully, but we're just going to extract the guy and get back. Nobody's the wiser, hopefully. They get there, and they're set up in their different places, and immediately communications start going down, and so one of them is basically the sniper. And she's sitting in the back, kind of eyeballing people. And one of the other ones walks up to her because her comm's gone down and says, "Hey, nope, we found some dead ones, but no green. Nobody's a Skrull. It's just locals, and they're starving to death. No big deal." And she's like, she takes that for granted, and then looks back through her scope and sees the guy she's talking to down there on the ground too. So she immediately turns around and kills him.
Yeah.
And then everybody realizes it's an ambush. And throughout this mix, there's a little bit of a fight and a dust-up, but basically, Veers finds the person they're looking for, checks his code, which no one should be able to steal. It checks out, and then she still finds out that he actually is a Skrull who knocks her out and kidnaps her.
Yeah.
Which, and all this is a lot more enthralling than it sounds as we're explaining it right now.
Yeah, we're kind of numbering it down.
Well, yeah. I think there is kind of an interesting, you know, we talked about, we're seeing the Skrull, you know, she's part of the Skrull or the part of the Kree. We've only seen the Kree as bad guys,
right.
But they're kind of like portraying their Kree empire almost, you know, federationists, you know,
totally.
You know, everything's clean and everything kind of works. You know what I mean? Everybody's seems in harmony, you know, it's not. The evil empire where, you know, it's not a fascist state.
Yeah.
You know, like you were used to seeing evil empires.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, we're introduced to the team that she goes on the mission with. And they're kind of like a motley crew with fun banter right off the bat. You know, it's not like an imperial, you know.
Right.
Garrison, you know what I mean, loading up with a bunch of stormtroopers.
Right.
So they're presenting it in a real interesting way and kind of. Trying to get you in that mindset of like, hey, these are the good guys, you know. So Veers gets captured, and then we start to see some of her memories. Because
the Skrulls are...
The Skrulls have a way. So she's been captured by some Skrulls, and the Skrulls have a way of extracting her memories, which she doesn't even have yet. So she's seeing her memories and being confused by them.
Right.
And this was one of those, like, I thought this was a really cool scene, but man, I really needed to see this movie twice because I get thrown off pretty quickly by non-linear storytelling anyway, so maybe it doesn't throw other people off nearly as much, but I had no idea what was going on here. And then the second time I watched it, I was like, okay, this is all great.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it was cool seeing the flashbacks, and you get to see some of young Carol. yep. through here, which is, I think, is one of those things. I think I read that they filmed, like, a lot of footage for, like, her in all these different stages, mm-hmm. and only a few seconds of it really get to the movie.
Right.
But you get some insight into her basically always getting knocked down, all these yeah. different moments where... Yeah. You know,
yeah. trying to do stuff and it being too much.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But continuing to persevere and do the next thing also.
Yeah.
But the whole point that they're looking for is basically trying to track down
Annette Bening.
Annette Bening, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
which they start to get a bead on her, and that's when Carol wakes up.
Yeah.
And when she wakes up, you know, the systems sort of stop working, and she's just sitting there trying to figure out where she is. And then the like one of the little scrolls, like they're basically watching a monitor of her mind, and one of the little scrolls that's working on her comes up and just sort of taps her on the head, and like it's great because the image starts to flicker in the background yeah. and the main scroll turns on. It's like, oh, that did something. Do that again.
Yeah, yeah.
But then, you know, she fully comes awake. She starts using her little beams to break her little beams, her photon
her
blast.
Little yeah. beams.
Those tiny little yeah. beams, you know. Yeah.
To break free, breaks her legs free, but then she gets into this giant Skrull fight through the ship, except she's still got these shackles on her arms, so she's basically just punching dudes with these big metal things, but yeah. she keeps trying to blast them, and she can't, you know?
Yeah.
So that was neat.
Yeah. She's wrecking the place.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah
totally. Yeah.
yeah. Nobody, she yeah. takes out the whole ship, then finally gets the gauntlet thing she's trapped in off and blows a big hole in the ship.
Yep, yep. Wipes through them all, jumps in an escape pod, flies down to Earth. That yep. gets wrecked also, so she basically yeah. falls out of that and into the Blockbuster. That
right.
I've seen from the trailer and everything where
yeah.
she goes, which is a really weird Blockbuster you pointed out too when we were watching it. We have no idea how their ordering system works.
Oh, yeah. with stuff with the just movie, randomly
yeah.
in there.
Yeah, yeah, like it wasn't alphabetical, it wasn't by genre.
No.
I don't know what they were doing.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of Schwarzenegger movies though.
Yeah.
She blows up that True Lies standee right away.
Yeah.
Right.
I saw a hook in the background.
There's a Jumpin' Jack Flash. Predator.
They're just maybe. Trying to set
Couple.
The...
They're just like, oh, what are some 90s movies?
Yeah, yeah. Here's all these movies that you remember from this era. This is, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what that was.
So, but she lands in this Blockbuster. She comes out. This is one of those where there's points of this movie that kind of throw me off. I enjoy this movie quite a bit as well. I have not, after three viewings, been able to fully describe my feelings on certain aspects of it. And one of them is how open she is about everything. Like, I feel like she should have some semblance of an idea that Earth has no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
But she's just talking to everyone who approaches her as if they were also intergalactic citizens,
yeah.
you know? Which I guess technically maybe they are, mm-hmm. but clearly no one has a clue what she's talking about. But she continues to talk to them like they should.
Right.
And she's just overly glib.
So you know what it reminds me of, and I was thinking about this last night. I was thinking about this last night. Fine for me, whatever. Doesn't matter. The timeline. I was thinking about this before. It reminds me of She-Ra before she is, you know, when she's still part of the Horde, and she just. Is believing the Horde lies.
Totally.
You know,
yeah.
So like if she's just assuming that, you know, like she's been being conditioned by the Kree for 6 years, trying to convince her that she's part of the Kree or whatever, you know, so they probably have just been telling her like straight out, like, look, yeah, we just run everything, we rule everything, and the Skrulls are the bad guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, so like she lands on this planet and she just assumes like, well, this planet's probably run by the Kree too.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
they,
I don't know. I mean, if she's intergalactic special forces, I feel like she would know that some planets aren't in the loop, you know?
I mean,
I don't know.
You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
I mean,
she hasn't been
going
on.
That'd be like a Navy SEAL showing up in Afghanistan and being like, why don't they speak English?
But this is also her first mission.
I was going to say,
she's been in training, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they did kind of make that clear, I feel like. Like, this is her first time really going out there and doing stuff, right? So, I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not how they teach people. Maybe on there they're just like, hey, everybody's a Kree except for the Skrulls. They're bad.
I don't know how the Kree have gotten this far in this war. But it is a fun little scene because she walks out of the Blockbuster and walks straight up to a security guard. And she's like, hey, are you head of security in this area? And she's like, he's like, kind of, the movie theater has its own guy. Yeah. You know? But she's looking for communications equipment, so he points her to a Radio Shack. She goes and somehow breaks into the Radio Shack and furnishes a way to turn a payphone into something that can video call with her spaceship.
Yeah.
You know, however many light years away. And talks to
Jude Law.
Yeah, I can't remember his name.
Jan Rog.
I never, ever remember that. Yeah, that you've corrected me on this show 10 times now. Yeah,
episodes. Let's start keeping track.
She talks to Jan Rog.
That's why I just tried to give you the out with Jude Law.
Yeah,
thank you.
You're welcome.
She talks to Jan Rog, Jan Law, whatever.
Jan Law. Jude Rog
tells him. Tells him that the Skrulls have a way of getting into the mines. So,
like a Viking drink. I'll have some more Jude Rog.
I'll have another.
Sorry.
warns him that the Skrulls have a way of getting into their mines because the guy had the code that he shouldn't have been able to have. She runs out of time because the long distance
the payphone
start
thing
to apply. Yeah. But he's basically telling her to lie low, and she's like, nope, gonna find out what's going on.
Yep.
And that's when Nick Fury shows up.
Yeah.
Young Nick Fury.
Yeah.
Which,
and a young Coulson.
And a young Coulson.
And a young Coulson.
Mm-hmm.
Young Coulson
at no point in this movie was off-putting to watch. The Nick Fury, man, the de-aging is as good as it's ever been here. This looks like 40 to 45-year-old Sam Jackson, no problem. And it's delightful. And he acts like 40 to 45-year-old Sam Jackson because Sam Jackson hasn't changed in 30 years.
Right, yeah.
There are a couple of scenes that are a little more action-y or even just wide shots of him moving where, I mean, he's a 45-year-old Sam Jackson that moves like a 70-year-old Sam Jackson.
Right, yeah. And it's a little off-putting really to watch.
Yeah.
You know, he gets into a fight scene at one point, and you're just like, whoa, my brain cannot handle what is happening in front of me right now.
Well, bro, you can't CGI cartilage back into knees. That's all there is to it.
Truth.
That's all there is.
Oh, man.
But overall, I mean, glad they used him. I'm super happy to see him here. He's very entertaining throughout the whole movie. Just a warning, if you haven't watched it, prepare for that.
Yeah.
Well, and now if you didn't notice it,
you're gonna. Yeah. Now you're never gonna not.
Never watch this again.
It's probably not that serious.
No, probably not. Still a pretty good movie. Yeah.
I do really enjoy him in this movie. Yeah. I feel like he's a lot of fun throughout the whole thing. I really like here in the scene how he's just such a different Nick Fury than we're used to seeing.
Yeah.
Because it really kind of, like, he is with S.H.I.E.L.D. here, but it kind of puts into perspective how small the universe still is in this era. Because they're not used to seeing aliens and weird stuff or anything. So he's like, he doesn't quite believe what she's saying here, right? He's laughing it off. He's kind of funny. They're kind of doing that thing where they're almost treating her like she's a crazy person because she's talking about all the things.
Shape-shifting aliens.
Like she's, because she's just being dead serious and explaining everything that's going on. And he's just kind of like, right, okay, yeah. And it's just so interesting seeing like a different kind of Fury like this. It's so different than we've ever seen Nick Fury before. But I thought that was a fun way to like look at the character in this movie, because as we come to find out, this movie's kind of the turning point for that character, right? It's kind of the thing that shifts him towards the direction of being the Fury that we know in all of the other movies.
I kind of did not like him.
No
And I talked a little bit about this when we talked about it on the Geek Easy. But I just felt like he was too different.
Too different?
He was too different. And I felt like he was too different and he hadn't changed enough by the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I would have had him. I think I would have been a lot more okay with it if we had seen the change in him.
Right.
You know?
Okay.
But even by the end, he's still kind of, he's not Nick Fury, you know, like some pretty heavy stuff happens, you know. I mean, they go, you know, jumping ahead a little bit, like he goes to space, you know, he meets some shape-shifting aliens, he fights some Kree, you know, like he does a lot of stuff that could have jaded him pretty hard here, and I think that would have been you know, I would have been happier with that, to see like a hard shift in him, rather than just kind of have to assume that between now and Iron Man, he goes from, you know, singing "Wait a Minute, Mr. Postman" in the kitchen to, you know, trench coat, eye patch. You know what I mean?
I want to talk to you
about the Avenger Initiative.
Because this is 10 to 15 years tops.
You know?
Yeah. We don't know what else he's seen as he's progressed through S.H.I.E.L.D. by any means. It's like it's not totally unbelievable, but you're right. If they're going to bother to put him in this and put him through all of this, there could have been some additional gravity put on that that character, you know?
For sure.
But he is funny.
He was fine to watch. I mean, like, I don't say that. Like the character was fine. Like, he was entertaining in the movie.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Jackson did well. Like, I enjoy watching Sam Jackson do stuff. But he was almost relegated to, like, comic relief.
Yeah.
You know, and never got out of that role. Like, if you're going to make Nick Fury comic relief, he's got to pay it off somehow.
Yeah.
And he didn't.
Yeah.
He just was still comic relief.
I agree with that.
All right, where do we go from here? Where do we want to talk about?
So we get a lot of, once Carol and Sam Jackson hook up, we get them just, you know, trying to unravel the mystery.
Yeah.
You know, and they kind of, you know, they kind of form their alliance and they kind of get each other. Let's see. She steals the motorcycle and puts on a Nine Inch Nails shirt.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of little 90s nods that are fun.
Yeah.
It gave the movie a little bit of character. I liked that.
This was another one, too, that had a pretty great soundtrack, considering the era that we grew up in this era.
Yeah, for sure.
Because, man, there's several times in this movie where I'm just like, all right. Like, like a song would come on, and I'd be like, okay, there's my teenage years right there. I could feel this, you know? Yeah.
And I forgot how prevalent girl rock was in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they hit you with a lot of it here, just to remind you, you know, I mean, it's not fully, there's some Nirvana and stuff like that mixed in there also, but they hit you with a lot of those just reminders, there was a lot of this back then.
We get the scene where they infiltrate a S.H.I.E.L.D. installation and Pegasus to find out, because they're still looking for Annette Bening. And so they get into this secret bunker, figure out that Annette Bening was a Kree. They run away from that. they escape that together, and then they go to Louisiana to visit Veer's friend.
Right.
Which is where they start to piece things together a little more.
This is where she learns that her actual name was Carol Danvers.
Right.
And the Veers came from her dog tag being broken, right?
Yeah.
That's when they called. That's why the Kree called her Veers, was because that was on the broken part of the dog tag. So she starts piecing that together, and it's because she's starting to kind of like feel it here too, right?
Yeah.
Like she's because the daughter's kind of attaching to her a little bit, and they got a lot of that going on, and she's
Aunt
got
Carol.
And she's got the pictures, and she's got the old bomber jacket, and all that kind of stuff. So things are starting to feel a little more like she's realizing that she did have a life here, and these were obviously close people to her and stuff like that.
And that's when the Skrulls show up.
I was going to say, and then the Skrulls show up here. Yeah.
Which is a big turning point in the movie, and the big revelation we go through here, I think, is the main Skrull who had kidnapped her, had tried to infiltrate her brain. They had fought a little bit on that ship. He had then taken over Sam Jackson's boss, was the lead in that fight when they were trying to get out of that installation. He shows up now. There's another Skrull outside kind of guarding the daughter. And there's this tense moment where there's this kind of face off. And he's like, look, like, I mean, I'm not trying to do any tricks here. I'm here as me. I want to talk to you about some of this stuff that's going on, because I think you've been duped by some of this stuff.
Right.
And, you know, they even do that moment where, you know, they're like, well, if you're here, just straight up, what's going on outside with the other one? He's like, well, I gotta do something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But he lays it all out for them, a story the version of the story that she's never heard, basically.
Yep.
That they are being persecuted. They are just looking for a home. The Kree
They refused to join the Kree. Yeah, they refused to bow down to the Kree Empire. Yep. So the Kree is trying to exterminate.
The Kree showed up to take over their world, and they said no. Right. And now they're being hunted and exterminated. And again, you get that, you know, I mean, history is always written by the winners.
Yeah.
So Carol, as a Kree, has believed everything she's been told, and now she's seeing the other side of that coin for the first time. And, you know, she starts to believe it.
Yep.
And so they have...
they're according to the black box from her crash.
Yeah.
And here's where we get the full story.
Yeah.
So they listen to the recording of the black box, which has that great moment where they're waiting for it to load.
Oh,
They're loading it on the 90s computer. Yeah. And she's like, what's going on? Why is it taking so long? The humans are just like, it's loading.
Yeah.
That's what it does.
Yeah.
But then they hear it, and everything comes back to her, and she remembers that she was flying with Annette Bening, who we find out is Mar-Vell. Who was trying to build a light speed engine, and then the Kree showed up and shot her down, and
it was trying to help the Skrulls. Yeah.
Yep. And then it was actually Jude Rog who showed up and shot them down.
Yep. And then he basically just took Carol Danvers back to Kree.
Well, after the so the engine explodes, gives her her powers.
Right.
She now we've got the orange. She shoots it. Yep.
Which is why he takes her, right? Because he blows it up, she absorbs the powers, which is what gives her her powers. So this is still, I don't know, and maybe, because have they already revealed at this point it's a Tesseract? Like, we can bring that up, though, right?
It's next.
Like, okay, yeah, because is that when they get up to the space station? Okay. So that's where they end up going, up to the space station.
They fly up to Mar-Vell's space station, and that's where we find out this energy source is the Tesseract.
The Tesseract. So boom, the Tesseract's back again. And this was the energy source for this drive that she was going to...
Guess who's back.
Back
again.
Tesseract.
Yep. Tesseract. Tell a friend.
Did the same thing.
So, okay. I want to talk about, like, the explosion thing and her getting her powers. Because I don't feel like I quite understand this still.
Okay.
So, like, do her powers come from the Infinity Stone? Did she absorb some of the Tesseract? Like, the... Well, which one's inside the...
Space Stone.
The Space Stone. So, did she absorb some of the Space Stone? And that's what gives her flying and super strength and space beams things that she can shoot? Or was that from this quantum drive or whatever it was that was being built?
I just put quantum
in front of everything, yeah.
hyperdrive
or whatever it was that she was building.
So, they didn't explain that.
Yeah, I know.
So, what they kind of explained is that she had built this... She had built this light speed engine.
Right.
Mar-Vell built a light speed engine.
Quantum light speed engine.
Quantum light speed. But it needed a power source.
Oh.
They
should have got some of those batteries.
The Harbulary batteries?
The Harbulary batteries, yeah.
Yes.
For the quantum light speed.
For the quantum light speed. Generator.
This is productive.
So the Tesseract is going to be the power source. Now, they never really explain, had she already charged it up one time? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
they don't really explain that. When they get to the space station and the Tesseract is right there, she just straight picks it up and nothing happens.
Yes, yep.
So you almost feel like there had to be...
Well, like, other beings have held the Tesseract, like Loki's held it.
Loki, fine. But he's an Asgardian.
He's an Asgardian.
Yeah, but I mean, he can't just pick up a stone, I don't think.
But
I don't think the Tesseract carries the same...
Red Skull couldn't hold the Tesseract. Yeah.
Red Skull touched, and nobody in Captain America, like humans can't touch the Tesseract.
Yeah, but she's not human.
And Nick Fury makes sure to not touch it in this movie, right? Or didn't they allude to it that he couldn't touch it?
Yeah,
I'm almost positive that was a thing in this.
Well, but he didn't want to touch it, but
like she doesn't have to be powered by it to pick it up. Is all I'm saying. Like she's is beyond human.
Okay, so she's a super being of she can wield an Infinity Stone. So
I don't think Loki could just pick up an Infinity Stone.
But do you think pick the cube, up the casing? The cube is able to.
Yeah, I think the cube weakens that effect.
Okay, all right, you might be right. It wasn't. It did stand out to me though that she was able to just pick it up.
Yeah, for sure.
And it does stand out. I just don't think it necessarily. And she may be powered by it.
Yeah.
I just don't think that one necessarily leads to the other.
It melted through the floor of that ship in Captain America. Remember?
Yeah. But it sits in the.
It sits in that lunchbox. What's going on here, Marvel? I need an explanation, please.
We need
MCU. Maybe you've dropped the ball. This whole thing's over. It's ruined.
Ant-Man and the Wasp and now this?
It's rough.
There's definitely no chance we're missing something.
And in games not called Avengers Assemble, I don't even want to see it.
Here we go with that again.
I'm done.
Oh, my gosh. All right.
Danny just hit stop.
Here's my other thing.
Okay.
So they're on the space station. All the other Skrulls are there. The families are there. They reunite, you know.
Refugees.
There's kids Skrulls and all this stuff. Okay, so the big swerve with this movie was that, the Skrulls are probably the good guys and the Kree are the bad guys. Except if you're at all familiar with the comic books, this feels very strange to me.
Yeah.
Personally, I have a real hard... Like, it feels weird to me.
Yeah.
Making the Skrulls sympathetic.
Yeah.
Because the Skrulls have never been good in the books. Like, so the Kree versus Skrull war has always been one of those, like, big moments in the comics. It gets referenced a lot. It's always kind of one of those things that it's a big deal that it happened in the books.
Yeah.
So it's cool to see that come to the MCU finally. But the Skrull, both of those guys, the Kree and the Skrulls, have always been treated as bad guys.
Right.
Like, they had this war against each other, but neither one of them are technically good guys because we've got problems with both of them here.
Yep.
And I mean, the Skrulls specifically, I mean, we've got like the Super Skrull that was built to fight the Fantastic Four.
Yep.
That was like a big villain in the early Fantastic Four books. They fought the Skrulls,
right.
And they made the Super Skrull specifically to fight the Fantastic Four. And then in more recent memory, they did the big Secret Invasion storyline where like the Skrulls were infiltrating Earth and like pretending to be some of the Marvel superheroes. So I don't know. It's really interesting that they've made the Skrulls sympathetic in this movie.
Yeah.
And I feel weird about it. I don't know if I trust it. And maybe that's the way we're supposed to feel.
Yeah.
Maybe the comic fans are supposed to feel this way.
Right.
And the general public is, who don't know anything about the Skrulls, they won't see it coming kind of a thing. I don't know. Maybe that's what they're setting us up for.
We also have a snapshot of like one group of refugees.
You're right. Yeah. Maybe this one group is different than like the Skrull race in general, or like the Skrull, a specific army of Skrulls. I don't know. You might be right.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see where they go with the Skrulls now that they've been introduced into the MCU. Because we've even had speculations before talking about what's next after Thanos and all this stuff and Skrulls and Secret Invasion has kind of come up in our discussions before, so I don't know like
I mean this could be laying the groundwork for a lot of different things.
Yeah,
it could be a one-off. We might never see a Skrull again,
right?
But if they come out with the next movie and they're like, oh, look at these alien terrorists, you know, like they can still be Skrulls,
right?
Because some are good doesn't mean all are.
Okay.
Well, and even the main guy, what's it, Talos?
Yeah, something like that.
The main Skrull in this says at one point, like, you know, my hands are filthy from this war too.
Yeah,
you know, my hands, or I think my hands are soaked in blood or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, so like he acknowledges like he's done bad things,
right?
You know, because of this stuff too. So,
right.
I personally love it, man.
Yeah,
I really like that they. I like the swerve because they got me.
Yeah,
you know, so like I will.
That was
always
one of my favorite parts.
Yep.
Yeah,
I will always appreciate that.
They got me in the casting too, because that Ben Mendelsohn. I don't think I've ever seen him play a good guy.
Oh, yeah.
So as soon as he's like, obviously he's the evil person.
The evil Skrull in the movie. Yeah.
So halfway, like even halfway through when they're going through the whole explanation, I was like, it was a while before I bought it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. So I enjoyed that. I like some of the stuff they do overall for the MCU, as opposed to the comics, is they make, you know, small changes that make the world more complex.
Yeah.
You mm-hmm. know, and less good and evil.
Right, you're right.
And more shades
which
of gray.
Is,
so,
which is more realistic, right?
Because right, you know. Well, and it does create interesting opportunities mm-hmm. because now when they bring the next time Skrulls show up, we're gonna wonder,
yeah,
these guys good guys or bad guys,
yeah
you know, and so that gives us another element to like what's gonna happen next, yeah. You know, so I'm a fan of it.
Okay,
big fan.
Cool. Okay, so where are we? Oh wait, the cat's here.
Yep. It's Flurkin.
It's not a cat.
Goose is his name, Goose. Right? Yeah, it's not a cat. That keeps being a thing throughout the whole thing.
Yep.
I love, too, how Sam Jackson's so attached to it, but the Skrulls are terrified of it.
Yeah.
Because they know what it really is.
Yeah.
Get that thing away from
yeah,
me.
Yeah, get that thing. It's just a cat. I don't understand. He's so cute. Like the way Nick Fury's playing with it is hilarious.
Yeah.
But the Kree show up here, right?
Yes, on the Kree arrive.
And they want the Tesseract.
Yep.
Yeah.
They want it all. I mean, they want the Tesseract. They want to kill them Skrulls.
Yeah. kill them Skrulls.
They just come in, mustaches a twirling, man.
Yeah,
We're here for the evil. I'm Drew Grog.
The cat's got giant tentacles in his mouth, and he starts eating Kree.
Yeah, so, well, first it eats the Tesseract.
Oh, yeah, it eats the Tesseract.
Because Sam Jackson won't touch it.
Yeah.
Well, I guess first we need to go talk about they capture Carol. And send her back in to talk to the Supreme Intelligence.
Oh, yeah.
Which I don't know, I don't know what they thought was going to happen. Like, oh, he'll re-brainwash her. What, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that just seems weird. Like, well, she's obviously turned against us. Let's make her.
Yeah, like, I guess I don't know where they were going with that.
Yeah.
You're right.
I didn't put that much thought into it in the first place. I assumed it was more disciplinary measures, but I don't know what they were going to do.
Yeah.
But this is an excuse to get some Nirvana in.
Yeah, well, yeah. This is where it shows up, and they're playing Come As You Are.
Yeah.
Which is just...
awesome.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people out there going, I mean, this is a cool song. They don't understand what Come As You Are was like for us, our generation.
Right, yeah.
And this is where... So this is where Carol Danvers basically just, like, shrugs off and... Yeah. Is like, oh well, I
was
just
definitely one of the parts that made me cry.
Where she's standing up.
Yeah, they keep going back through the whole thing. All those scenes of her getting knocked down from earlier on, they start going back through those again as she's just kinda going through this like mind trip. And so it's her at different ages, just, you know, like she wrecks a go-kart at one point, she gets knocked down by a pitch in a baseball game or a softball game or whatever it is. She's in the Air Force Academy and they're telling her all the things she can't do because she's not strong enough, and she falls off this rope and all this stuff. And then as she's coming to this like realization of her own and deciding basically she's going to stand up to this power that keeps pushing her down, they just show every time she gets knocked down, they show the aftermath of her standing up at every age with that same look of determination in her face as it goes through. And then she gets to this realization moment of like, I don't have to listen to this. I don't have to do any of this.
Yeah.
I have all this power and I've let you control it for this long, but it doesn't have to be that way. So what happens when I just decide that's not going to happen anymore? And basically, kind of charges at the Supreme Intelligence, who starts to hold her back, and Carol just starts walking right through it, you know?
Yeah.
And in the real time, like, she's sitting there shackled and she's got that thing on her neck that's been holding her, inhibiting her powers the whole time. Well, she starts to glow and rise, which, Was it you said when we were watching it yesterday? Yeah. You're like, why didn't they just murder her right there?
Right.
Yeah. Like, as soon as she's sitting there, like, shackled and starts glowing and lifting off.
Well, yeah.
You know?
I mean,
Blast her and let's be done with this.
If Judrog had just been like, hey, just somebody shoot her quick.
Yeah. But they don't, so she, inside the realm there, she just bursts right through the Supreme Intelligence. Outside, that inhibitor just kind of pops and fizzles.
Yeah, pops right off.
Yeah, she breaks out and picks that thing off, and we just get that moment of, like, she's just glowing, you know, like, tone
full
ahead.
Super Saiyan.
She just goes on.
Yeah, Super Saiyan. Yeah. Yeah.
She has unlocked her powers, and now she's about to wreck some folk.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we get this giant battle scene to that No Doubt song.
Yes.
Oh,
which is also awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is also, I was laughing, too, because, like, this Kree force, like, they're just super weird. Like, the web, like, one guy has, like, and like Judrog has, like, anti-gravity bracelets, one guy has, like, a sword, the Minerva has, like, a sniper rifle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there's just no, like, I don't know who was outfitting them. They just picked whatever they wanted.
Yeah, totally.
Like, it would have been real helpful if they had all had guns.
Right.
But yeah, she just wrecks them.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure it would have been.
Well.
Yeah.
We haven't mentioned at all that Ronan the Accuser is in this movie, too, again, which is awesome stuff.
Yeah.
It's just real cool getting to see him again since Guardians of the Galaxy.
We get to see him up close pretty soon here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah. So I just thought that was a lot of fun. And also the way they leave it, like, it's possible we could see him again, too, with future Captain Marvel stuff, which is pretty cool.
Well, because that's the whole... I mean, she wipes through the spaceship. She's basically trying to cause a diversion so Sam Jackson can get everybody off the ship.
Yeah.
That's when... The Flurkin starts eating
Kree
guys or whatever. Yes. We get to one moment where they get captured by some Kree, and then we realize that it's actually the Skrull. And so they lead him to the ship. The Skrulls take out the Kree that are still there. They all get on board, and they all blast off back to Earth. The main Skrull does take a shot as they're going through, because I think Jude Law got to him right before they were going through. But then they send the ships after Sam Jackson and Rambo. I can't remember.
Oh, yeah.
That was her last name.
Yeah.
Carol's friend. Yeah. Who's flying the ship around. They're flying away, trying to get away from these Kree that are trying to chase him down and shoot him out of the sky, basically. Meanwhile, Carol figures out... She jumps on Judrog's ship.
Yep.
And is flying it down to Earth, and at one point when she gets down into the atmosphere, she falls off of that thing, and is just plummeting and plummeting and plummeting, and right before she hits the ground, she has that moment where she starts to fly.
Yeah.
And then just takes off, because at one point she even flies by Sam Jackson's ship, and, you know, him and Rambo are like, what was that?
Yeah.
And she's just flying around, taking out...
Man, dude.
Yeah, because this is when the Accusers show up.
Yeah.
And start... They're basically just going to bomb Earth because Earth has some Skrulls on it.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so they send like 50 giant rocket bombs down, and she just goes... They do that thing where, like, she goes up and, like, it's a struggle for her to get one of them out, to take one of them out. She takes the lead one out by catching it. But by the time she struggles and gains the power to, she throws it back in, and it just blows all of the other
like
ones
dominoes.
Up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she flies into space... Without any problem at all, and just starts wiping through fighter jets.
Just, like, flying through them and just taking them
out. Takes out an entire Accuser ship.
Man.
Like, one of the giant ones, just by flying through it until it explodes. And then flies up to Ronan's window, essentially. And that's when we get our close-up of Ronan. And he's like, yeah, get back to the jump point.
Yeah, let's get out of here.
You know? Yeah. But we're going to be back for the weapon. And they're like, oh, the warp drive or the tesseract or whatever they say, and he's like, nope, the girl.
Yep.
Yeah.
But they leave at that point, and this is when Carol flies back down, lands near where Judrog crashed. They have this great scene there, that one of my favorites in the movie that I actually absolutely loved, where he gets out of the ship and he draws his gun and he gets his little anti-grav thing ready, and he walks a few feet and he stops. He's like, I am so proud of you. And he starts putting everything back, you know. He's like, you've come so far. We've done so much. I've taken you so far. But, You know, I've always said you'll be ready to really fly free when you can take me down without using your powers. So, you know, we'll throw all this stuff to the side. No weapons, no power, no anything. This is your moment. This is your moment right here where you can really prove to me, you know, and prove to yourself that you're really ready. So let's go. Let's just go. And she just blasts him with a photon blast, knocks him back 100 feet into a rock. And just walks up to him and is like, I have nothing to prove to you.
It's amazing, dude. That's so awesome.
Yeah,
great
it's
scene.
So awesome.
Yeah. Reaches her hand out like she's going to pick him up. And then when he reaches back for it, she just drags him back to his ship. You know, puts him in and is basically says, you know, send the Supreme Intelligence a message. She's not in control and I'm coming back to end this war. And that is what it is, you know, and sends him off into, you know, tries to start up his ship. It starts to stall out, so she just photon blasts it, and it just takes off.
Man, so she has got super crazy powers at this point. And you kind of watch this and just go, is she just like straight up the strongest superhero in the entire MCU now? Because we've never seen anybody like Thor has come close, but we've never seen him just straight fly through and take out an entire fleet of ships like this before. This is some kind of overpower type stuff, almost like getting to that OP kind of thing. Like, do we think she's overpowered? Do we?
We'll see.
It'll be interesting to see. Yeah, like, I mean, is she just going to come show up and just straight fly a hole through Thanos? And like, I mean, well, I don't know what was so hard about that.
I said from first viewing on, and I haven't changed there, I feel like they could have gotten the exact same effect through, you know, one giant missile instead of 50.
Yeah.
Now, granted, she knocked out 49 of them with the first one, but it still seemed like she could have been just as powerful without it being, without it feeling way overdone. There could have been an air of mystery to it, I guess.
Yeah.
Would have been the way to say it. They could have left themselves open to, you know, well, she's clearly crazy powerful, but how powerful is she?
Yeah.
As whereas she's just flying in space through spaceships that she, I mean, she, like, she literally takes one out just by going wide and just plowing right through it, you know, like, it just seemed like they went real far, real fast there. Now, I don't know what's next for her. I don't know how she fits into Endgame. I'm not complaining about any of this yet. I'm just going to leave it open to interpretation as the movies go forward. I don't have any reason to assume they don't know what they're doing.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So I'm fine with it. It just, it felt like too much to me, but I will give them the benefit of the doubt until I see more.
Okay. Yeah.
Good point.
I've been thinking on this since we talked about that, because so like okay, I don't see a difference between like her being overpowered, and like the kind of power that they give Superman. Now I'm not a big Superman fan, and part of that's because I feel like he's kind of overpowered.
I was gonna say, I mean, that's isn't that everybody's so, complaining about Superman all the time? Is that he's overpowered?
Right.
And he's got kryptonite. Does she have a kryptonite?
I mean, I assume she's got to have something.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I'm with John. It kind of depends on where it goes.
Yeah. Maybe Rogue's gonna show up and steal a bunch of that power.
Steal
from
a bunch of the power.
I think it's possible now, right?
Yeah. Why wouldn't they at this point?
Man, I don't know.
That'd be crazy.
That'd be a terrible way to end that.
Probably show up wearing black leather because yellow spandex just won't.
Oh, boo! Yellow and green with a bomber jacket on. Maybe she steals that bomber jacket from Carol.
She steals
too.
The bomber
That's
jacket.
That's where Rogue gets that.
Maybe so. I don't know. You know, I think we need a. I almost wonder how much it's not kind of set up there, because we need a character that feels like they're a game changer.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because Thanos showed up, and Thanos felt like a game changer on the other side.
Right.
You know, so like we kind of, you know, Did they want to set us up with someone, you know, and for it to be Nick Fury's last line of defense, you know, like she's got to feel like a game changer.
Yeah.
You know, so I think there's probably maybe a little bit of that.
Well, I think you're right, but I think you're right in the sense that I think they're trying to make everybody think, oh yeah, now they got Captain Marvel, so
yeah.
She's going to be the one to save the day.
Right.
Except I think that's a swerve. Because I don't think she's going to be the one, kind of a thing. And maybe. I think we've already kind of talked about some ideas before. And
yeah.
Like, I have strongly felt that Nebula is going to have a big part in the takedown at the end. Yeah. But I can totally see this being a thing where they're like Captain Marvel's kind of meant for everybody to go, oh, yeah, now we've got Captain Marvel. She'll totally be the one to save the day. And you know what I mean? And then we kind of... I don't know. I think it's a swerve. I think it's a swerve.
Yeah, but maybe.
We'll see.
Time will tell.
Let me.
In 4 days.
In 4 days.
And tomorrow, after this podcast, for everybody watching this podcast. Yeah.
This is all live. Well,
there's a very short window where it'll be time will tell, and where it'll just be, hey, go watch.
Go watch
Endgame. Tell us what you think. No. Okay. So let me put this out there. How much we talk about her being overpowered, does it feel that way because she's a woman and we're not used to women being overpowered?
No, it feels
that way because nothing in the MCU is anywhere close to Superman. So, like, the closest thing you can go is go, well, I mean, it's just like Superman, it's not that big a deal, except that that's a different universe, a different realm,
right?
That is a big deal here.
Yeah, like she unlocked her powers, flew into space, and then just flew holes through an entire fleet of spaceships.
Yeah.
We haven't seen anybody do that in the MCU.
Yeah.
And like I said, the closest we've gotten is Thor unlocking his lightning and beating up a bunch of Skull dudes on Asgard, but that's not the same as flying up into space and just wiping out an entire fleet of ships. You know what I mean? Like, that we have
even
not
Heimdall
seen...
with those two knives only took out one spaceship.
Yeah. So this is
it's not a gender thing at all. It's a precedent thing.
Yeah.
We've just never seen anything like that in these movies. So
you're right. So that was my only thing with that. All right. What are some other things we should probably talk about here right at the end? Nick Fury gets his eye scratched.
Nick Fury gets his eye scratched.
By the Flurkin.
Yeah, which is the worst part of this movie.
Disappointing, right?
Yeah,
That's how I felt too. Or not, maybe not disappointing, but underwhelming or just...
No,
I guess disappointing is right.
Yeah, disappointing is
disappointing
right.
Disappointing is right.
Disappointing is right. And it underlines what's wrong with his character in this movie. Because him getting his eye scratched out is played for a laugh.
When it's been
a defining character trait.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we saw him burn the eye patch when S.H.I.E.L.D. was over. We saw him, you know, he had to come in, you know, I mean, if you want to get ahead of me, you got to keep both eyes open. Like, you know, the hero moment of Winter Soldier, you know, Like, that's been so much Nick Fury, and now just randomly the cat scratched it on a whim? No, that's weak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Weak sauce. And you played it for a laugh? You want me to laugh? Like, he's been the spy.
Yeah.
You know?
And even the reaction he gave, like, he just got his eye scratched.
Mother
out. Flurkin. Like, it's probably fine, right?
Yeah.
You know, and they do that thing where everybody's like, like, and then he just hangs out in a cabin for a couple of days.
Right.
Like, go get that thing looked at.
Yeah, singing is the postman.
If you can't see out of it, stop singing and go to a doctor.
Right, you know? So we got that scene at the end there where he's also in the office, right?
Yep.
And we get the Coulson interaction.
We get Captain Marvel flying off with the Skrulls.
Yes.
So we don't want to forget that part.
Okay.
That's basically the ending of her story is she does decide to leave Earth. She's going to help these guys find a home somewhere.
Okay.
She'll be back before you know it, is what she tells the little girl.
Yeah.
Which clearly is a lie.
Yeah.
But that's the end of her story on Earth until we meet her again.
For Endgame.
That we know of.
Yeah. Well, that we know of, I guess. There could be another Captain Marvel movie in between that's set
Well, yeah, I guess she could come back to Earth and then nobody realizes and leave again, or who knows. But
so we can also, like, so she says she's going to go help the Skrulls find a home. She also tells Judrog to deliver the message that she's coming to the Skrulls and she's going to break down all their lies.
The Kree.
She's coming back for the Kree.
Yeah.
And she's going to break down all their lies and set everything straight.
Yeah.
We know from the Guardians that the Skrull Empire is completely different by the time we get to Guardians.
The Kree Empire.
The Kree Empire is completely different. Like, they're, you know, even the Accusers are not the Accusers anymore, and Ronan is regarded as an extremist terrorist by the time we get there.
Yeah.
So,
because the Kree are signing treaties.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she's probably pretty busy, huh?
Yeah. Like, yeah, you're probably right. Yeah. Yep.
So
she cleaned that up.
Right.
We get the Nick Fury thing where he's typing up the idea.
Yeah.
The Protector Initiative.
The Protector Initiative. Yeah. And then he sees the picture of Carol on her plane, and like it says Avenger on the side of her plane, and he changes it to the Avenger Initiative.
It's a good thing Bruce Wayne sent him that press kit.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, I had a problem with that. That's just so shoehorned in there at the end.
We didn't need it.
Yeah.
We didn't need that, but yeah, agreed. I agree with that. But that pretty much wraps up Captain Marvel.
The mid-credit sequence is the one with the Avengers.
So okay.
We've got Captain America, Black Widow, and War Machine. Banner are all there.
Because the pager stops beeping.
Yeah. Did they say how long it had been? I felt like they did, but when I listened for it again, I don't know if I missed it or they didn't. I don't remember them saying.
Because
at one point they said, like, I thought we bypassed the battery.
Right.
Which maybe that's all I'm thinking of. That insinuates it's been a while.
Yeah.
It just stops going, and they're debating trying to get it back started and not knowing what it even does. And, you know, somebody says, well, you know, I think it's Banner who's like, we don't even know what this thing does. And Black Widow's like, well, Fury did, so start it back up. And then they all turn around, and Captain Marvel's standing there, and she just goes, where's Fury?
Yeah.
And then, boom, end of that. And then the actual post-credit sequence is just Goose jumping up on Nick Fury's desk and puking up the Tesseract.
Yep. Which is how S.H.I.E.L.D. got it, apparently.
Right.
That's how S.H.I.E.L.D. got their hands on the Tesseract.
Which I also brought up to John, because in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they have a bunch of dead Kree. So do we think Goose just threw up all those Kree he ate, too?
Wow. Like,
is that where they got the Tahiti bodies?
Oh, wow. Interesting. I bet so. What? That's the best explanation I got. Jeez, that's awesome. All right, what's your Captain Marvel rating?
Ooh, my Captain Marvel rating is, I don't know. What? We'll say 3.5 photons.
3.5 photons. Okay.
I liked it.
I like it.
I like it a lot. I think I will like it a lot better post Endgame. Like, I think when I own this one, it'll be one that I watch a lot, because I like this movie a lot. I just feel like everything's kind of in a holding pattern, because I just want to see what happens in Endgame. I just want to get there.
You're totally right.
I feel like once we get on the other side of that, when I buy the Blu-ray, I'll probably watch this Blu-ray a whole bunch.
After I see Endgame, I mean, I'm the same way. When I get a hold of this movie on Blu-ray, I'm going to end up watching it again.
Yep.
And I think I will like it more at that point, because I feel the same way. Like, I liked this movie when I was watching it. I didn't feel like I walked away loving it.
Yeah.
But, like, I strongly like it.
Right.
And I think it's just the same thing. I think I'm just in that, like, in-between stage of Infinity War and Endgame and these other movies that are happening right now, just like they're there and they're great and I'm glad we've got them, but like I want Endgame.
They should have just taken the year off
between
Infinity War and Endgame.
Yeah, so I'm interested to go back to this one and see how I feel about it watching it again.
Yep.
All right, if we are done discussing Infinity or Captain Marvel, we now that we have wrapped up our entire look back at the MCU films, and Endgame is the next one, we figured it was time to rank all of these movies.
It's time. So, I feel like we need Michael Buffer. Like, I feel like
I know, right?
This is the most epic ranking to ever rank a set of movies.
It was tough, I'll tell you that.
Yeah?
And I feel like there's some of these that just kind of, I don't know, I don't like putting numbers in front of them sometimes. Because there's a lot of these that I really like, and I'm just like, the number makes it look like I don't like it, but I do really like it, so it's tough. But we've done this at the end of every phase, yep. And so we each individually ranked them, so they're probably going to be different from each other. I'm sure they're not going to be exactly the same. You just want me to jump in first again, since I did it last time?
Yeah, go for it.
It's fine.
All right, we're going to go bottom to top.
Bottom to top.
Here's my ring. We have 21 movies to rank now in the MCU. So at the bottom of the list, at number 21, is still Iron Man 2.
Yep.
20 is Thor Dark World.
Yep.
19 is Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah.
Right above that at 18 is Ant-Man.
Okay.
So those two are right next to each other there.
Yep.
I feel like just from the bottom three, even up to Ant-Man, like the quality jumps up a little bit. But even from Ant-Man, like I feel like this point here is where the quality starts changing. Incredible Hulk is at 17.
Okay.
I put Captain Marvel at 16.
Ooh,
yep. It's low. Pretty, it's a little low.
It's low.
Iron Man 3 is at 15.
Yep.
Age of Ultron at 14.
Okay.
Thor 1 is at 13. I ranked Doctor Strange above that at 12. Black Panther at 11. This is where things are getting hard, right around here.
Okay,
I would say 11 up is tough. Yeah. So Black Panther's at 11. Iron Man 1 is at 10. It still ranks very high on my list. And I remember talking about way back in that episode how I felt like that was still one of my all-time favorites.
Yep.
So it is still in my top 10.
Okay.
Civil War is 9. Guardians Volume 2 is 8.
Mm-hmm.
Captain America, the First Avenger at 7.
Yeah.
Spider-Man Homecoming at 6. And it was actually really hard for me to place those two, like, as I really love the first
America
Captain America.
Okay.
But I think my geekness for Spider-Man pushed it above.
Okay.
But then my top five.
Yep.
Thor Ragnarok is at 5.
Yep.
I knew that one was going to be in my top five. There was no way around it. Guardians of the Galaxy sits at number 4. I have rearranged my tops a little bit since the last time. Winter Soldier now sits at 3.
Mm-hmm.
Infinity War is at 2.
Okay.
The very first Avengers is my number 1.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's my list.
Okay.
Who's up next? John?
Sure.
Okay.
I can go in. Okay. So there's some similarities, especially at the bottom.
We're all going to have the same bottom 3.
Our bottom.
Yeah. Bottom four, probably.
Yeah, I think I got
Iron Man 2 at the bottom. I've got Thor the Dark World next. I've got Ant-Man and the Wasp, and then Ant-Man.
Yeah.
This is the same. Did you copy off me?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
But now, so there's what, 17 movies left?
Yeah.
And I think all seven, at least 15 of them are in my top 10.
Okay. Oh, give him. Okay.
So,
come on, John.
So it gets rough already.
Yeah.
Man up and commit.
I put Thor next.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow.
First Thor, real way lower than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
And then Incredible Hulk right after that. I'm giving Incredible Hulk a little bit of a nudge because of my respect for it. Even though it sort of outplaces that, could easily be a little lower. Not much.
Yeah.
I guess it could easily be 1 to 2 lower, but. But I want it higher than that, you know. I got the first Iron Man next after that. I really thought Phase 2 was going to occupy most of my bottom stretch, but really just those two weak points. The rest of it was a lot stronger than I remembered coming through. So I got a lot of Phase 1 down there because I really just feel like we sort of grew disrespect to them at all.
Yeah.
We just, they keep getting better for the most part. I've actually got Captain Marvel next.
Okay.
That's another one that I can see shifting one way or the other within a few years here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, that's where it sits. Iron Man 3 after that, my favorite of the Iron Man movies, but that's still pretty lower than I would have expected, as all of these are outside of the top five. Then I got Black Panther, Age of Ultron, which honestly probably gets a little bit of a bump just for being an Avengers movie.
Yeah. What number are we on? I'm missing your numbers.
Well, I don't have the numbers. That's the problem.
Oh, gotcha.
So,
okay, all right, go ahead.
Yep. So let's see. So that was 11.
Okay.
So Age of Ultron was 11. So now we're in the top 10. Top 10, I got Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Okay.
All right.
Saved by the Last Hour. If the first hour was a little stronger, it would probably be three spots higher on the list. But, man, does it pull in strong. I got Doctor Strange. I really wanted to get that higher on my list. That's just like
it's in your top 10, though.
Every time I sit there, I just love it's that so movie good. More.
Yeah. I love it.
It's so much fun. Then I've got the first Guardians of the Galaxy. Eight. Yep. Okay. Got Captain America Civil War after that.
Okay.
Followed by Captain America the First Avenger.
Okay.
I've got Spider-Man Homecoming up in my top five. And again, a lot lower than I would have expected that one to be.
Okay.
Even in the top five. Thor Ragnarok coming next. There's not a minute. There's not a situation I can imagine being in where I wouldn't think putting Thor Ragnarok on would be fun.
It's
got to be so up there. Good, yeah, man. Every second of it. Here's probably my surprise to myself on here is I actually bumped down the original Joss Whedon Avengers down to 3.
Okay.
On the list. Everything I've ever said about it still holds true.
Yeah.
I still get tingles every time I watch it. The problem is I think I reserved the number 2 spot for what I feel is the best standalone movie.
Mm-hmm.
In the Marvel Cinematic Universes, which is Captain America: Winter Soldier, start to finish. If you're not looking at franchises, if you're not looking at building towards things, if you're just looking at a well-made superhero movie that spans a few genres, that's my go-to right there. And then the top of the list is Avengers: Infinity War, which I think it does everything the first Avengers did, but bigger.
Yeah,
you know, it is not. I don't know if it's a movie that would play nearly as well if it didn't have 18 movies of backup going into it, but it does.
Right,
and I just all the tingles I get from all the moments in the first Avengers movie, I get all those in Infinity War. Plus an extra half an hour's worth.
Right.
Plus an extra 5, you know, different franchises worth. Like, everything just comes together in that movie so well. Yeah. And as perfect as the first Avengers was, doing it 6 years later with 10 other movies guiding it through is much more impressive to me.
Absolutely.
You know? So.
Cool. We had a lot of similar spots, too, for some of those movies. So, all right, where are you at, Jeremy? All right,
here we go. 21. Dark World. I still think that is the worst watch. I think it is the worst watch.
But that Loki death scene.
Totally fair.
20. is Iron Man 2, which gets bumped up because I hate it enough that I'm entertained by hating it. 19, Ant-Man and the Wasp. And I got to tell you, I was almost tempted to bump Iron Man 2 above Ant-Man and Wasp.
Oh, wow.
Just on the basis that Iron Man 2 failed that spectacularly for me.
Yeah.
Like, it's memorably bad.
Yeah.
I, you know, Ant-Man and Wasp is just like a non, it's just a non-quantity, you know, like I don't remember it at all. It's a better watch than Dark World. Much less memorable than Iron Man 2. But Iron Man 2 is such a piece of garbage. I was not willing to give it the satisfaction of bumping it up a spot. 18, Ant-Man. 17, Spider-Man Homecoming.
I knew you were going to put Spider-Man low.
Low.
There's an Ant-Man and a Spider-Man?
There's an Ant-Man and a Spider-Man. So I feel like you guys have both talked about how it's hard to put yours, you know what I mean, and 15 of yours, John, are in the top 10. Like, I feel like mine are in a pretty definitive order.
Okay.
But now that I've got them in order. What I will say is, like, the margins, man, like this is not it's not like a wide margin. None of these are like, you know, 17 with a bullet, you know what I mean?
Like,
they're all pretty close, but I think this is a pretty good order. So 16 is The Incredible Hulk, 15 is Thor, 14 is where I've got Age of Ultron, 13 for Iron Man, Black Panther comes in at 12, Captain Marvel at 11, and those two were tough for me to, either one of those could flip-flop. Yeah. They're one of the few spots where they could argue there. Iron Man 3 at 10, Guardians 2 at 9. Doctor Strange at 8.
So good. Yeah, it is. It really is.
Yeah. I love Doctor
Strange. That was one of my favorite ones to revisit through this whole thing, I feel like. I feel like... all the movies, they've all been fun to go back and watch, but like I feel like Doctor Strange is the standout where I like got a brand new appreciation for it by watching it for this show. Yeah. So yeah,
I had that funnily enough with the Guardians 2 and Iron Man, Iron Man 3.
Oh okay,
I felt not a new appreciation for Iron Man 3. It was a remembrance of how much I liked that movie.
Yeah.
For Guardians 2, it was like I was really looking at it because, as I've said over and over, I try to look at them with a little more critical eye.
Right.
Instead of just being like, oh, I love the Marvel movies, which I do.
Yeah.
This was one that it helped. Like as I was looking at it, I was like, man, this is a really, really smart movie. Guardians 2. Okay, 7, Civil War. 6 is First Avenger. And 5 is Winter Soldier. 4 is Ragnarok. 3 is Guardians of the Galaxy. 2 is Avengers. And number 1 is Infinity War.
Awesome.
Yep.
All three of our top fives are basically the same movies almost. Like
in different orders.
Yeah. Like we're pretty much on the same page, I feel like, with a lot of those. That's awesome. So now you guys make these lists.
Yep.
Use the comment section on YouTube or go to the Facebook page by searching for Geek Easy Podcast. We want to see your lists. Put all 21 of these movies in order. We'll see how different they are from all of ours. It'll be interesting to see everybody's lists and how they rank them. Because we're assuming that you watched all of these with us as you were listening to these podcasts. So get to it, guys. And that brings us to the end of our journey, right?
Man, yep.
No, it's not the end. It's just a long pause.
Yes.
So, I mean, we're planning on this is the end of the journey leading up to Endgame.
Right.
Marvel movies aren't going anywhere anytime soon. We got 2 more coming out in the next 3 months.
Yeah.
We will be back with more mini episodes as they drop.
Right.
But this is really the end of the event run.
Yes.
Of the marathoning of trying to get all these through so we can get all of our opinions out there so that you can agree or disagree or yell or cheer or whatever it is you feel like doing at your screens. You can take the ride with us right up through Endgame, and now we're here at that point.
Right. Right.
Every ending is just a new beginning, Dan.
That's right. So
something.
So we'll always drop a new episode of Marvel Good Yay anytime there's a new Marvel movie to discuss. So you can definitely expect to be coming back for our discussion on Endgame after we see it. So it'll be really good stuff. So with that being said, guys, the podcast is available on multiple different platforms. So there's still plenty of time to subscribe because there's going to be lots of stuff still to talk about in the future. So head on over to YouTube, do a search for Geek Easy Podcast and hit that subscribe button. Or if you prefer the audio versions, you can tune in on iTunes, on Spotify, on Google Play, on Stitcher, on Podbean, or your favorite podcasting app. Rate us, review us, follow us, do all that good stuff. And get ready, guys. We're in the end game now.
Dun, dun.
The Geek Easy Podcast is a production of PixelDan.com. Musical tracks used in the intro and outro are used with full permission of the respective owners or creators. Intro and outro narrations are provided by me, Brian T. Stevenson. PixelDan.com's The Geek Easy Podcast is provided for entertainment purposes only. The views expressed are those solely of the hosts or guests, and do not necessarily represent those of PixelDan.com or any other party. Be sure to join us next time for another installment of the Geek Easy Podcast.